Google's Pixel lineup gained two new members this week when the search giant randomly announced the Pixel 6 and the Pixel 6 Pro on Monday. The announcement not only cut off any potential leaks over the next few months before a bigger launch, but it also included and was framed around the announcement of Google Tensor, the company's first custom processor or system on a chip. I'm Jason Cipriani with co-host Jason Perlow, and on this episode of Jason Squared, we're going to discuss our Pixel 6 impressions, what this move means for Qualcomm, and what it will mean for Google moving forward. All right, Perlow, so we've been hearing rumors for the last couple of years that Google was thinking about looking into or possibly actually creating its own processor for smartphones and other products, but we didn't quite know when it was going to happen. And then seemingly out of nowhere, Google announced Tensor. So what gives?
Well, I think that there better be a really good price drop on the Pixel 5 because they did they just Osborned it several months before actually putting the Pixel 6 up for sale by pre-announcing it this early. So I think that's going to have some interesting effects on the value of at least my Pixel 5 that's sitting on the desk right now. I was hoping they were actually going to announce it for sale. And then I could have just, sent it back, and exchanged it, no. So we get to wait a couple more months until that phone comes out. I think we finally heard that Google decided that it didn't want Pixel just to be a plain vanilla Android phone anymore. That's what we're hearing out of this.
Yeah. Using the standard somewhat off-the-shelf components outside of their machine learning algorithms and their custom. They did have a smaller machine learning chip, I believe, or a security chip in the Pixel before. But, this is a step forward for them. And like I said, this announcement came out of nowhere. There was only a handful of outlets pre-briefed, probably to control leaks. And the Pixel 5 doesn't sell a lot anyways, let's be honest.
No, they're not
selling a ton. So if they cannibalize some sales by people waiting for the 6 or 6 Pro, then so be it.
Right.
But I think this main thing was once carriers started getting their devices in hand, Tensor was going to leak, right? There was going to be the first thing we usually see leak of the Pixel phone is a couple of pictures from a stock room at one of the carriers or a testing room at one of the carriers, and then a screenshot or a picture of the screen of the phone with whatever is inside it, processor, RAM, memory, all that. And if the first thing was, this isn't a Qualcomm chip, that would have been a lot. So maybe Apple Silicon is as far as the announcement goes and getting ahead of it with Tensor. But it's an interesting announcement, and we're going to dive into that more. But first, I want to start with, what does this mean for Qualcomm? I mean, they've been their chip partner since the Pixel line existed, and even going back before that, the Nexus line and their partners, Motorola and Huawei and everyone else there, Qualcomm has been in all of Google's phones thus far. So what does this mean for Qualcomm?
So, Qualcomm is very much the number one leading semiconductor company in the mobile device space. Okay. They sell so many chips that they are so successful that even Samsung itself, who manufactures them for Qualcomm, right, historically has used their SoCs in their highest end products pretty much overwhelmingly in favor of their own Exynos chip. Now, that has changed only very recently with Samsung using Exynos and Galaxy S21, and I guess we'll know pretty soon what they're going to use in the next generation of Z Flip. But basically, Samsung uses a lot of Qualcomm stuff. Okay. Qualcomm captures about 40% of the overall smartphone application processor market, with MediaTek coming in at around 26% for the lower end stuff and Apple at 20%. Okay. So the overall volume shipments of Pixel were never more than a few percentage points of the smartphone market or even the Android phone market. Overall market share shrunk dramatically in 2020. They're about 2% now of the entire mobile vendor share in North America. So it's not going to impact Qualcomm's bottom line in terms of sales. It's not going to move the dial in any respect. Yeah.
100% agree with you that my my initial thought was when I thought, well, what about Qualcomm? This means nothing. I mean, yeah, they're going to be at least materially, right? Like there's the narrative and there's the story around, oh my God, Google left Qualcomm. But let's be real. Google has always been using older processors by the time they announced the Pixel, right? Yeah. We've talked about it on this show before.
It's always been a huge disadvantage for them. By the time that you're ready to, the Pixel comes out, it's already at the end of sort of the year, the cycle for Qualcomm.
Right? Yep. We usually see Qualcomm announce a new processor in November timeframe. Yep. And by January, we have phones using that new system on a chip or processor. And the Pixel line usually launches in October. So you're at the end of that life cycle, as you said. And there's not a whole lot of Pixel devices being sold. I think I read yesterday around 1% of the market is Pixel, which is why they don't care that they're cannibalizing Pixel 5 sales by announcing two new phones a couple months early, presumably. You know, they may launch them earlier. We don't know. They just said later this year. But if they stick to their October release schedule, that's when we'll see them. So it's not like Google made a ton of money off Google, or Qualcomm made a ton of money off of Google's Pixel phone lineup at all. So, I mean, there's the marketing hit they're taking for it, but materially, bottom line, bottom dollar, this doesn't mean a whole lot to them.
Nope.
It'll be interesting to see how it goes
going. And I want to see what 5G chip this thing uses. I seriously doubt that Google developed its own 5G modem. So they may end up having to use Qualcomm's X50 whatever 60 whatever the heck they use anyway. So
yeah, I think we should jump down that rabbit hole real quick, because I keep saying system on a chip or processor. And to be very clear, Tensor is a system on a chip, and Perlo, what is that exactly?
So an SoC is a complete stack, right? It includes memory, it includes the cores, it includes GPU, all the things that you need to run a computer. Including traditionally the accessory chips, right?
That
a system would use, bus management controller, all the other things that, you know, display management control, all that stuff on one chip. Now, because of the 5G transition, right? And traditionally the modem, what we call a modem is the what we call the baseband processor unit, right? Is typically has not been integrated into the SoC, although some Qualcomm SoCs, like the one in the Pixel 5, integrate it, right? But generally speaking, the baseband processor on the higher end phones is a discrete processor.
So and that's, we refer to, even with Qualcomm Snapdragon 888, we say it's a processor, but it's actually a system on a chip. It includes, like you said, the full stack. And it's just, in terms of mobile, I guess the reference to system on a chip or SoC and processor has become somewhat interchangeable. But to be clear, this is a system on a chip. And there's a lot of stuff here that we don't know what Google licensed.
We have we have no clue. We have no idea what the core architecture is. We have no idea what the GPU is. There's a lot of we know very little about it, other than the name of the thing at this point.
Right, and you know, there was some made by Google Twitter account did a 13 tweet thread of Tensor and the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro and what you can expect, and basically the highlight for Google and what they wanted to announce so far is this is going to be a huge leap forward for them in machine learning, which is a good segue into our next talking point, which is what does this mean for Google? And more specifically, what does this mean for the Pixel? So I guess we'll start with you, Perlo. What does this mean for Google?
Yeah, so let's start with the name Tensor. I don't think that it's a coincidence that this chip shares its name with TensorFlow, which is the open source machine learning and AI software library that Google introduced in 2015, and the Tensor Processing Unit, the TPU, that Google Cloud data centers use, which also run this library. So this library is used in many kinds of applications, including computer vision, facial recognition, of course, you know, computational photography, right? Now, I'm sure that it's been a bit of an embarrassment for Google, right? That the fastest platform for TensorFlow currently on a performance per watt and per core basis is Apple's M1, Okay, Apple Silicon, right? Developers absolutely love the Mac Mini now for this purpose because it's cheap and it's fast for this type of machine learning workload. So Google clearly sees the need for their own silicon, right? Just like Apple did, to bring them unique value add, not just to things like Android phones, but other types of applications, which I'm sure include machine learning in other places, such as, you know, Nest Cams and other devices that have cameras on it. Now, I don't think it necessarily means we're going to see the same manufacturing at scale, right, that Qualcomm, Samsung, or Apple sees with their chip designs, right? I think for a while, maybe even forever, right, this is going to be exclusive to Pixel phones. Okay, I don't think we're going to see widespread minting of these things in massive volumes and reselling them to other Android phone manufacturers. I think what we might see eventually is Google branded Chromebooks at some point. That's probably a given. Maybe 100%. we might even see a new slate with one of these things if Google decides that it's the right time to re-enter that market. Maybe a Tensor Box, right? Something to complete with an Apple TV, a high-end streaming deck with other functions for gaming and other stuff on it. Maybe. I'm just speculating, right? It should be noted that we don't know at all who's manufacturing this chip for Google or has lent them any architectural assistance for its design. It could be a TSMC. Could be any number of companies, including Samsung. Could be NVIDIA, right, who just bought ARM, right, or is working on buying ARM. It could be anybody. Yeah.
Android Central posted a story, everything you need to know about Google Tensor. And going through it, according to the report on Android Central, and they don't source where they got this information from, so maybe it was on background or off the record from Google is my guess. Samsung LSI is doing the design and manufacturing of this chipset.
So yeah, that's not surprising at all. I mean
Android Central is reputable. I trust this. So I would say Samsung is the manufacturer and helping them with the design. You know, the intricacies of the design. For me, what this means to Google is it gives them full control over their product. And in the same way that Apple has control over their product, if you control all of the hardware, you can make the software do a lot more than it did before, right? And so they could push the limit of machine learning. And in that thread I was just referencing from Made by Google, they talk about some of the things you could expect to improve on the Pixel 6 because specifically of Tensor. And that is voice commands, translation, captioning, dictation, all that stuff, which is already good on Qualcomm silicon.
Yep.
And the experience there, especially the recorder app on the Pixel, I use that for a lot of my interviews because it auto transcribes it in real time and it's very, very accurate. And they're talking about, and this is Google's own words, big leaps in translation, captioning, and dictation. If that's accurate and we really see that, I can't imagine how much better it's going to be. And then also, you know, Rick Osterloh in the announcement from Google, announcing Google Tensor and the new Pixel phones, talked about how the new chip is allowing them to take their computational photography that has been in the Pixel line from day one and really, really drastically improve it. I mean, they put astronomy overnight, you know, photos into the Pixel line a couple of years ago, and they look great. And
yeah, this is it could allow them to make the next gen leap. The other thing I see that this chip doing is kind of like what Amazon is doing with the Echo Gen 4s and Alexa, which is the ability to offload cloud queries the same way to accelerate cloud-based functions by having some of the queries and the processing done on the local device versus in the cloud. So the response time can be improved because there's so much, obviously, when you talk about Google services that Android uses, right, and that the phone is going to need to be able to leverage, right?
Yep.
With the assistant and all that. So I think that if this chip will improve those capabilities, that's going to allow, you know, Android, particularly the Pixel, to be in par with what the iPhones can do.
Yeah. Case in point, iOS 15 adds offline Siri requests and answers to the iPhone and iPad. And yep. I believe A12 processor is the cutoff for that. I'll have to double check. Or listeners will have to double check. But there is a cutoff for that. It is specific to newer processors and Apple's A1 or A series processor. You know, and another thing this does for Google is they're no longer beholden to Qualcomm's release schedule. We've already talked about how they were always at the end of life for the next Snapdragon or the previous Snapdragon processor. And now when they have a Tensor chip ready to go, Tensor 1, 2, whatever they end up calling them, they could release a product. And there's no, well, this is an old chip with new one coming around the corner. This is the latest chip. This is the best performance that we have to offer. And as long as it's on par with the next Qualcomm chip or superior to that, no one is going to complain at all.
The only thing that they're going to run into with this is potential supply chain issues when it comes to the semiconductor manufacturing supply chain. And because if they're getting manufacturing assistance from Samsung, for all we know, Samsung could be manufacturing the entire phone, right? Because I mean, you're talking about the RAM, you're talking flash storage, all that kind of stuff that obviously Samsung knows how to make. Also display. This could be really no more different than a Galaxy phone in name and in specific chip implementation, right? So obviously Samsung is going to prioritize its own production over Google's if it's coming out of their factories. So like I said, we don't know how much of this phone is being made by Samsung besides the chip itself, right? There's other components that this thing could use. Could be, you know, camera modules. So there's a lot of other things that go to a phone besides a chip that, you know, Google's going to have to be dependent on, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's a problem everyone's facing right now.
Yeah.
It's almost like Google unknowingly picked the worst time possible to start their
awful
own
time.
Awful own time processor system on a chip line. Just, man, can you have any worse timing than this? But you just talked about cameras, and we talked about how Google, or Rick Osterloh, who is in charge of the Pixel division at Google, former CEO of Motorola back when Google bought Motorola and owned it for a short bit of time, he eventually left and then ended up at Google taking over all of their hardware. And so he talked about the new camera bar that is on the back of the Pixel 6. It is a very unique design, I will say that. And I was having a Twitter conversation shortly after the announcement with Larry Dignan, our ZDNet's editor-in-chief, and Mary Jo Foley, who does a bang-up job of covering Microsoft. And both of them came to the conclusion that the camera bar, which is what Google is calling it, looks like a raccoon's stripe going across its eyes. And now the reason Google claims that they had to do it like this instead of the 4x4, the square camera array that we've seen on phones for the last couple of years is because they have actually bigger lenses and sensors, and they had to make room for them all. Perlo, I know you think it looks not like a raccoon's eyes, but
no.
What do you think about this design?
Well, you know, I was looking at the color palette that they're using for the casings, and I'm like, this reminds me of something. And I started Googling, you know, image match, color matching, and I'm like, and I realized what it does look like. It's something like you would see in a cosmetics advertisement, like for eyeshadow. like this is the phone that Revlon would come out with in the 1980s. It's the exact. It looks like an eyeshadow case, you know, for that women it would does. Use to for makeup, like my mom would used to have, or in the 1970s, you know, with the CoverGirl makeup, you know, commercials that you'd see on TV.
Yeah, I could see that. You sent me a picture, and I definitely could see it. So for the listeners who haven't seen the Pixel 6 yet, we have a story on ZDNet. With some photos of it. Basically, there is what looks like a glass back that covers the whole back of it. And then there's the top portion that's maybe just a sliver. It's a little bit bigger on the 6 Pro. Then there's a black bar that goes across it.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the back of the phone. And the colors they picked are very makeup-like, mascara-like. And so I definitely see where you're going with that. And as far as the design goes, look, Google's always taken some different approaches to how it designs and the materials and the colors it uses in its phones. And some of them share the same overall approach, while others look completely different. And I've always appreciated the fact that Google has given us a break from the standard square or black rectangle that we have become accustomed to from Samsung or Apple or, you know, any other smartphone manufacturer. Yes, when you look at it from the front, you still have a black rectangle, but you flip it over and then there's a pretty unique design going on most of the time on a Pixel phone. So, you know, I'm going to need to see these phones in person before I make a final judgment. We have the 6 is 6.4 inch display. 6 Pro is a 6.7 inch display, I think is what our sister site CNET reported. I didn't get those details from anyone because Google was being very stingy, but they CNET actually interviewed Rick Osterloh about the launch. So he let that info out. So these are going to be pretty big phones, at least compared to the Pixel 5, which is currently a 6-inch display. So
yeah.
I don't know. Pixel 6 Pro may be a little too big. And possibly. Both models have different color arrangements, too. So, if you're going
for a I already color, own one giant phone. I think that I'll probably just get the regular Pixel 6 when it comes out.
And I want to go back and correct something I said earlier about Android Central and where they got the information about Samsung producing the chip. They actually are taking a very educated guess. This isn't something that came from Google on background or off record. But so what they found is evidence that says the Tensor system on a chip is using Samsung's Zynos 2100 as the foundation. Chip for the
that's processor. The same that's exactly the same core that's in the S21. Yeah,
so it's a Cortex X1 core, 3 A78 cores, and 4 energy efficient A55 cores is what's in the 2100. And so they found in developers, and they're reporting this out, and I apologize for messing this up earlier in the podcast, found evidence that this is what they're basing the Tensor chip on. So that'll give us a good idea of performance, right? And what to expect. And then obviously on top of that, we can expect some machine learning and some AI improvements.
That's where I think the performance is really going to hit the road. Not so much at the core level, because we know the cores are nowhere fast as what Apple has. It's a question of the other functions, the application functions with this ML stuff and the camera is really where it's going to make a difference, in my opinion.
Absolutely. So Perlo, we've heard that this is going to be, at least the 6 Pro, is going to be on the expensive end. Someone from Google tweeted it out. And the 6 is going to be not top of the line, but not mid-tier anymore. So let's say we fast forward to October. The phone's just launched.
$800.
For the 6?
Yes.
Okay, 6 Pro is probably $1,100,
$1,200. Yeah, that's where I think they're going to be at.
Which one are you buying?
Oh, I'm buying the regular one. I mean, I don't need another giant pro phone. I mean, the pro phone that I got to spend money on is going to be an iPhone 13. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm with you. Obviously, I'm getting one as well. Probably, I really want, there's like a gold yellowish color in the 6 Pro. The color combination just looks sharp to me, but the more I think about it, and there is some camera differences.
I'm buying black, dude. It's going in an ugly case. I don't care.
Oh, so you're just back to the black rectangle with, well, then that's charcoal. Not a mascara case.
Charcoal. No, it's charcoal. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, I'll probably go with the 6 as well. We'll just have to wait and see when we get more details, right? I mean, we have Android 12 still coming. You know, Google's going to optimize that even more for the Pixel 6 and Tensor. They already kind of hinted at that, and we'll just have to see. But I would imagine I end up going with the Pixel 6. We'll see. I don't know. Any closing thoughts, Perlo?
No, first of all, I'm glad that Google's finally doing something to differentiate themselves with their devices. I think they clearly saw over the last few years what Apple was doing with their own IP and differentiating, you know, with their own processor capabilities. And I think it was just, you know, how do you compete, you know, as a company with all the other Android companies out there that are using your code base? You know, I mean, it you can't differentiate on user interface because for Google and Pixel is all about purity. in the Android build. So you can't charge more for a pure phone when Samsung and OnePlus are coming out with differentiating phones, right? So that was always their dilemma. You don't want to charge more for vanilla. So I think the chip IP, them differentiating on machine learning and all these other aspects is where I think they can make a difference in terms of adopting their products, right?
Yep, 100%. So here's where I stand on this. I don't care what this means for Google. Obviously, I hope it's successful enough for them to justify continuing to do this. But I think in the smartphone industry that has become somewhat stagnant, we already kind of know what to expect with the new iPhones and software updates and new Samsungs and new OnePlus and everyone else. We need more competition. Yep. And if Google is able to set the bar, which is what the Nexus line originally was intended to do, Google used Nexus to set the bar for its hardware partners and say, this is what you should strive for instead of these really crappy Android phones with a boring experience. Here's what you should do. And then the Pixel kind of came in as, all right, fine, we're going to do it. And they've tried to do it, but they haven't really put the money behind marketing and they've used the same parts and pieces. And now by taking this in-house and having more control, they can push it forward. And if that means Samsung pushes the Galaxy line forward, and that means Apple says, oh crap, we got to push iPhone forward, I'm all for it. And that's what I want to come out of this.
Right.
Obviously, I want Google to be wildly successful with this because I think the Pixel phones have always been some of the best. But they have to invest in marketing and getting this in on every carrier. We've talked about that many times on this show. And getting it in retail channels. And you know, there's a whole other show, and we'll probably go down this road when the Pixel launches later this year and evaluate their release approach and see where it happens. But yeah, better, more competition, the better. It's pretty stagnant right now.
Yep, I agree with that 100%. But I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with my Pixel 5 now. Right.
Well,
when should I get rid of it and sell it now? I mean, we're in the Android 12 beta cycle. I wanted to complete the beta cycle and then take a look at the release on it. But I'm thinking, like, should I get rid of the thing now?
Presumably, we're a week or two away from Android 12 becoming official.
Yeah.
Right. The last beta with official launch is supposed to happen. Well, the last beta is supposed to happen this month, which is the finalized build, so release candidate, Goldmaster, whatever you want to call it. And then maybe a week or two after that, we'll have the official release. So I don't know, wait for beta 4, do what you need for it, you know, get what you need out of it, and then get rid of the thing so it's worth some money.
Yeah, because usually, you know, Google does a trade-in on Pixel, but I'm wondering if it's going to depreciate too much before the time it... You know, this is what we go through every single year with these things. It's like, when do I get rid of it? I think I can live without a Pixel for a couple of months if I get rid of it now. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, Perlo, thanks for chatting with me today. I hope our listeners enjoyed this podcast and this episode. Yep. We truly appreciate it. I'm Jason Cipriani.
And I'm Jason Perlo.
And this is Jason Squared. Make sure to check out more of our work at ZDNet.com.